This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Boy there, in the center of being married, me and my wife. Oh, let's see if I get a little thing. So me, my wife, Joy, Kyle. Our oldest daughter, Jo Lynn, married to Andrew Smooker from Kansas and their family. Oldest son, Ryan, and his wife, Linda, from Georgia, and their children. We have a set of twins, Shannon, here, and his wife, Joella, from Stewart's Draft, Virginia. They are currently in Poland. And his twin and our daughter, Shonda, and her husband, Amos Stolzfus, head pastor there at Meadville Mennonite Chapel. And then Kyle is next in the family. Oh boy, I don't know why that jumped down like that. I guess it's okay. And then Erickson and his wife Marilyn, and they live in Iowa. And then Jordan is our youngest, and he is dating another native of this area, Miss Laura Gaiman. So anyway, we're that's our family. Enough said of that. I will go ahead and take a look here at a set of slides. Hopefully you got a handout there. And so if I can get to the right place, we'll get started here in just a few minutes. So why don't we pray? Father, thank you for this opportunity to share together. Think about family. Lord, I know that in this room there is much rejoicing because of family, and I suppose there are moments when there is sadness and grief. But I pray that you would help us today as we think about this within the context of the kingdom and the work that needs done around the world, that I'm praying that you would help us to have vision and desire. And I pray that you would just open our hearts and our minds as we share together. And I pray it in Christ. Amen. All right. Put this little clicker in here so that I can save my energy here a bit. All right. I'd like to actually begin with a referencing a story from our family. I'm remembering just now and today as I was pondering this discussion again and considering what ought to be said and left unsaid, a thought of a moment, 1998. We were in Poland. Who's we? Me, my son Ryan, whom you just saw a picture of a few minutes ago. Mark Wadel, some of you may know him, Anthony Gingrich, and Jay Kosteller. It was April of 1998. The remarkable thing is these boys were between the ages of 19 and 22. And I was on a mission. I was there with them and going to let them in Poland for 1 year. These young fellows, not married and all that, at a cabin, and they were going to spy out the land. April 22nd was Ryan's 20th birthday. And the next day I was going home. Now, if you know the laymans, you would perhaps recognize that we are not all that publicly emotional as it goes. Now and then we lose it. but at any rate, I'll never forget walking down an old lane there nearby the cabin where these boys were going to be staying for the next year. And all of us, and I was, of course, this was Ryan's birthday. And so I'm going to have a few private words with him. In an hour, I'm going to crawl on a plane and head home. He's turning 20. And I stopped and I thought to myself, Melvin, what in the world are you doing? What do you think you're doing? You're going to let this boy here? and you're going to pack up, then you're going to go home, and they're going to be here on their own. What is your problem? I'm smiling now, but I'll tell you, I wasn't then, I was weeping. Well, we left them there, and today, as I'm speaking to you, already mentioned that Shannon is in Poland, and a number of you have been there on different occasions on Hope Singers, and this and that and the other thing, and it's a story I tell. Ladies and gentlemen, it didn't just happen. Not because, and I don't say that because Sheila and I were such good parents, so much as to say, if a family has a ministry, they actually have a ministry. If they're effective in their community, home church community, and beyond, it does not just happen. In fact, the emphasis that I would like to put on what we talk about here a little bit is not so much on the great stories of family ministry, but how do you get there? What's the framework for it? Because I'm going to share with you here a little piece. I call it crossing the bridge. I use this often at various places. I found it to be very helpful just to challenge myself. So I'm actually pushing this afternoon, more in the direction of capacity to serve than what you actually do. So the little bridge that I have here works a little bit like this. So on the left-hand side of the bridge there, you see ideals, public ministry dreams. It would be a fascinating thing just to go around this audience here and have each of you talk about what your dreams are for your family. Some of you a little further along than others. But no matter where, maybe some of you not even with a family. But the question is, so what are your dreams? What are your ideals? What do you wish for? What do you hope for? As young families or older families. My discovery over the years has been the difficulty with people, particularly in our circles, is not their ideals. I am pretty certain that I could get some pretty good, excellent, outstanding ideals out of every person in this room. Dreams. That's not the problem. In fact, it's not the problem with the average person, Christian and non-Christian. We worked in prisons. I'll tell you a story or so about our prison work after a bit. But even there, I posed the question to hardened criminals already. So what do you hope for your sons? I've never had one say, I hope he grows up to be a cocaine addict. I sure hope he's a drunkard. I sure hope he just makes a mess of his life. You know, they actually spit out some pretty good ideals. They're not too far off. If they could actually get done what they wish they could, that'd be good. The problem is not the ideals. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, is the bridge. That's the problem. On the other side of the bridge, as you can see, if this thing clicks forward for me, yes, is an effective public family ministry. And by this, I'm speaking of something that is actually visible. So now think of a family. And all of you, I'm sure, know families that you see, they're older, they're farther along, their children are growing, maybe not all of them out of the home, but along the way, and you think to yourself, well, that's a family I wish. I hope my family grows up to be like that. So here the question is, on the other side of the bridge is the effective public family ministry. Picture it. And now remember again, the problem is the bridge. And on that bridge is what I call habits of alignment. Now remember, I'm pushing at you a little bit here about capacity. Actual infrastructures, things that actually do move in a direction that your ideals represent. Here's the catch. You know, it's not hard to see if you're thinking about that hardened criminal who's a cocaine addict and has this problem and that problem and the other one. He spits out his ideals, walks out of the prison, he's right back into jagging himself with needles and doing all kinds of different things. You say, well, come on. what do you mean? So this is what you want on that side of the bridge. I mean, that side of the bridge. You're hoping to get over it, but there's no alignment. The habits of life actually all militate against it. And I'm just wanting you to think about that with families. Maybe it doesn't feel that stark, but I see families doing this, and I don't mean to be judgmental. I don't mean to be throwing stones. I just mean to be saying, I don't get how they think this is supposed to turn out in the direction that I hear them talking about as an ideal attack. I don't see how in the world you could do it. Thinking of a family just now that I know who's they think that the husband has been saying that he would like for his sons to realize there are Christians other than Anabaptists. And so he has some of their family signed up to play on some of the local basketball teams where they don the outfits and do the practices and all of that. And in my mind, I'm just saying, no. So what's your expectation here? Where do you expect this to end? So these will become your bosom friends, and these teammates will be your buddies that you're going to spend 3-4 days, nights, a week with, and so forth and so on, and you have this expected outcome? Really? In fact, I sat down and asked the dad about this. Habits of alignment, and that's kind of what I'm wanting to talk about you. I want you to be sure to see the bottom of the bridge, because in case you're thinking that I think you can pull up yourself by your bootstraps and you can actually make this work, you can just manhandle it. You can just manage it. I got it. These are my ideals over here. This is what I want on the other side of the bridge, and I know how to get across at the habits. We're going to practice those habits, and we're going to align things, and I'm telling you it'll all work. You didn't hear me say that. What you did hear me say is that there's no way to get across this bridge without paying attention to these ideals, habits, and what the expected outcomes. You still need God's grace, and you still need God's mercy, and I would be the first one to tell you that if there has been any success in the Lehman family, it's kind of been in spite of, not because of. Okay, now, we tried to have enough sense to get some habits of life in place and some alignment, but I'm not stupid. Been around a little while, and children do have wills of their own, and I just recognize, and I just want to be sure you hear me say, I'm not talking about some formula that you can just press down on life in. I promise you, here's the outcome. I can't tell you that. In fact, I need to say at the end of the day, at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, we need the grace of God. I know this sounds so pious. I know it does. But forgive me. If I were to give one thing that Sheila and I did regularly, it was pray with each other and make sure that our hearts were aligned in terms of the purposes for our family. Now, I'll tell you right ahead of time, if you don't got mom and dad together, it'll be a problem. But we'll get to that here in just a moment. So that's the bridge. If you forget everything else I said, remember, it's the bridge that's the issue. You can see how this applies to much of life. Loads and loads and loads of life is right here. It's the bridge. And so I just urge you to think about that little model. Now, I'd like to move ahead here. So family is ministry. Just let me make a little change here to see if I can. I'll let it that way. I'm breaking my rules. I'm looking over my shoulder because it's not changing on my screen. That's why. So I have to make sure that it actually is making a change here. So family is ministry. And so now looking just at a couple of these issues. It's bumpy in here like this. So preparation. Beyond wishful thinking to creating space and time for family work for Jesus. I am actually going to try to see if I can't get this thing to switch to the mode that I wish it was in. It doesn't look like it's going to do that real well. I have a different computer than my own. Oh, well. It'll be all right. Okay, so beyond wistful thinking to creating, and I want you to notice, space and time for family work for Jesus. Okay? So we'll take a look here and see what we come up with. First, now I have things hopping all over the place here. I'm going to have to get a techie up here yet before I resume. Let's try that once and see once what happens. There we go. You begin with Mr. and Mrs. Trust each other. In fact, if I were to give one word that has got to be present in family structure between mom and dad, it certainly is trust. Certainly is trust. Never forget the moment walking in my kitchen door. We had a cocaine addict, former cocaine addict, living at our place from our prison ministry, 18-year-old, handsome young man, and in a lot of respects had become a Christian. And so we had offered our home, and he asked us if he could come and stay there. And I remember walking in the door, and here's Bobby sitting at the table, handsome man. He's talking to my wife. Now, in our prison ministry, I'd never left anybody there with her in the family long term or for a long period of time. But, of course, occasionally something like this may happen. I go to do something. I come back in. I walk in. There's my wife. She's washing dishes. And there's about, two children crawling around her feet and two other ones over here somewhere. This was in our early marriage. We must have been, relatively early, 26, 27 years old, in through there somewhere. And I remember thinking to myself, you know what? That gentleman could create havoc in this family. But there's one reason I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen. He hasn't run into a lady very often like that lady standing there at the sink. Okay, she's not a pushover. he's not going to get anywhere with her. I'm not afraid of this situation. I don't want you to hear me say that arrogantly. I want you to hear me say it in honor of my wife. I wish she was here, but she's shopping with some of her friends. She'll be back this evening, and if you want to talk to her and ask her about this, you can. But honestly, I have stated it before. I'll say it again. I want you ladies to hear this. If I have had any success in my public ministry, it's at least 51% Sheila's. Sheila's my wife's name. Always in tongue in cheek, say, well, I won't give her any more than that. But 51%. I really mean that. This first point, if you are going to get across that bridge with a public family ministry, that trust, that relationship, that confidence in each other has got to be there. It has got to be there. Absolutely a must. And so, I'm telling you, it's wishful thinking to expect to be able to absorb the needy of this world if that piece is not in place. This is not a marriage seminar, so I'm not going to go into more details about that, just so much as to say that's got to be there. Next, this is something I want to say kindly, and I hope helpfully. Parenting models and skills. I hesitate to talk here because I'm afraid I'll be heard wrong on this point. Some of the current parenting skills and actual habits that I see, I'm not so sure that they're going to lend themselves well to the long-term ministry for a family. Let me explain. I understand very much the need for a child-centered family. And what I mean by that is that children get the kind of attention that they ought to get. Get me warmed up on absentee dads, and I can get pretty hot. Okay, that's a huge, huge problem. I understand that problem. There is another problem that you can create. You can create such a child-centered family that you actually encourage a certain amount of self-centeredness. And you get so tied up trying to actually manage a demanding child who is just at your beck and call. You know, everything. And I see this happening, and but I want to say it very kindly. It works against you. In the long run, it works against you. Now, hear me right on this. When a child knows that you love them, and there's a way that this happens. I wish I knew the actual nuts and bolts of this. I always use my dad as an example here. Let me finish the statement. I'll come back to my dad. If a child knows you love them, you can make an outrageous number of mistakes, and they'll forgive you every time. But if they suspect you don't, you got a problem on your hands. You can't do anything right. I say that to teachers too. Some of you are teachers. I see teachers here. Always tell a teacher, if that child knows, or if that student knows you're on their side and you love them, you can make a lot of mistakes and they'll forgive you. So will their parents. But if they suspect you're not, first time around, you're done for. They'll have your hide for sure. Okay? So I'm wanting to be heard. My dad was not the kind of model dad that you hear talked about today. I don't say this to brag on him because I wish he had done differently. I never heard him say directly to me, I love you. But I have a question for you. Why did I never question that he did? There has to be another element in there somewhere that is actually ministering to that than doting to a child day in and day out. You did not hear me say neglect your child. You did not hear me say that treat them wrong. But I'm wondering about a public ministry for a family that has clamoring children who demand their attention and their time. I can tell you to be troublesome. I hope you heard some carefulness in that, because in no way do I want to be pushing people away from what I see. So more carefulness with children than what we used to see. That's a good thing. But be careful that you don't create a self-centeredness that actually works against you over the long haul. Enough said about it, but I'll just say this. Children are a tremendous asset in your ministry, but you have to put some work into it to happen. What are a couple of family habits that are actually worth thinking about? The power of routines. yes, rest, meals, chores. I don't use this as an example. It worked really well for Sheila, for example, was a highly scheduled, highly structured person. So when the babies were born, she fed them on a regular schedule. She would not feed them on demand. Okay, so she fed them on schedule, and it worked well for us. I'm not saying that it works well but routines. Routines work for you. Okay, habits work for you. They're the things that carry you through tough times. They're the things that carry you through what's going to happen if you're in ministry. Like, you know, the day that we're in ministry and I'm down in my basement and there's a fellow down in my basement with his hair about this long. And I think I'm going to get busted right in the teeth in the next 5 seconds is what I'm thinking is it looks like is going to happen here. Well, it's in those moments of crisis when the family's upstairs, the children are in bed and your wife's up there wondering what in the world's going on. You're down, there's a guy staring you in the face and he's saying, look, if you call the police, I'm going to you one, and yeah, you've got some decisions to make. It's in the times of crisis that habits and routines carry you through, ways of doing things, sturdiness of character, and so forth and so on. So, family habits. And of course, you know, I could start talking here about the routines of family devotions, a family altar, and so forth and so on. But don't neglect the simple things. Just the simple things that actually give you the structures and the capacity so that as your family grows, there are some things that you can do that if you had not done that hard work, might not have happened. We could talk on that one for a long time, but of course we'd run out of time here fast. Habits are not so much about efficiency. Make sure you get this. They're not about efficiency. They are about redeeming the time for the sake of our main mission. Okay? They work for you. Remember the bridge. Continuing here a bit. I just checked my notes here to see where I wanted to go with this. Yeah, so family then as ministry, just carrying it a little further along here. You have such things, I call this depth. Don't engage in a high-profile ministry. Don't ask for don't have a prisoner come and live in your house or a needy person of that nature if you don't have some depth. What do I mean by that? Well, resources, but listen, this is the main one I want you to see, community and connections. Now, let me tell you frankly that we homeschooled. I'm a teacher, been a lifelong teacher, so you know that I don't have an issue with with schools or any such thing, but we homeschooled and we had some reasons for doing that. And I'm not here to promote that. So much as just to say that we were very, very careful in our homeschooling to always turn our children toward our community, not away from them. So I'd use that as one example, but I'm just saying in general, it is a mistake to turn your children away from your community that nurtures you and that can support you and that can provide the kind of depth that you may well need in a moment of crisis, and not even in a moment of crisis. Just, here's an example. Our son Kyle, good friend of yours there, Nate, born in 1986. December 18th. I'll get there after a bit. 1986. I had agreed to accept a bipolar prisoner from Franklin County Prison. And don't you know that 2 weeks before Sheila was due to deliver this child, maybe a week, I can't quite remember, sure enough, John is released from prison. Or we get notice that he's going to be released from prison. Now, ladies, what would you do? You've got four children. You have a set of twins. Okay. And now there's one in the womb about to be born. And this crazy husband of yours in this prison ministry has actually agreed to take this bipolar man on. And if you know anything about bipolar, I didn't. That was my problem. I thought you could fix anything, you know, or you could, boy, was I had got an education like you would not believe in the next 6 months, did I ever? But here's what I wanted to tell you. Good friends, good community friends. Some of you know them, Wilmer and Vivian Funk. I see some of their children around here today. Don't you know that I called Wilmer. I said, man, I'm in a tight spot here. This guy's coming out of prison. And I said that I was going to, we would give him a place to stay. Could you help us? Of course. we just said, look, just a week or two here until this baby is born. And once this baby is we get our routines going, we'll have John back into our home. A week after Kyle was born, John was in our home. Again, hats off to Sheila, my wife on that. But hats off to Wilmer and Vivian, the community. Turn your face and the face of your children, the face of your family towards your community. You'll need them. I promise you, you'll need them. It is a huge mistake to go on this loner thing. Even if you're not so happy with your community, it's still a mistake to go on this loner thing. You need them. Depth. You need depth for family ministry. And it's not just all going to come from yourself. It's community and connections, people that you know, and so on. Never turn away from the community. It's always a mistake. Third, you need emotional capacity. If you're in ministry, I don't know what you would put in that blank. I left the blank there, but I'll tell you what I put in it. And then maybe if we have a little space, I'll hear from you. Where am I at there, brother? 13 minutes, okay. I put in their disappointment. Okay? Anybody who has been engaged in any significant ministry knows immediately what I'm talking about. It's ideal to think you're going to win in every case, or even in 50% of the cases. I don't know if I'm right on that, but I'm just telling you, There's a story unfolding right now. I just need to tell you. I told you, Shannon and Joella are in Poland. 10 years ago, Shannon and Joella took a little prison girl, baby from prison, named Jaina. Took this little gal. I'm trying to think. I think it was for a year and a half that they had her. A year and a half or 2 years, right in that area. The mom got out of prison, and so Jaina goes back to the mom. Now, I don't need to tell you ladies, that's plenty of time for a lady functioning as a mother to develop a strong bond with that child. And Joella did. I'll never forget the day as long as I live. This was a disappointment to them, but here was the thing. Right down here at Harrisburg, Shannon and Joella asked Sheila and I if we would come along with them to bring this child back to their mother. And we said, okay, yes. Remember, we're not very emotional. Listen, that was a ripper. I can't even describe to you the feelings that went through me. You know what we did? We took that little girl down there, and I can still see in my mind's eye, as clear as can be, this little white pullover and little pink trousers on this little year and a half, and the pamper bulging out, you know, and all that stuff. And we took the child down there. We down into some mobile home park. It was fairly well kept. It wasn't like it was desperate, okay? But down into that park, and we set her down over here on the driveway. And over there was a little trike and a few things like that. We went inside, and she was out there playing with her sister. We go inside to the trailer, and we talk with the mom a little bit and the dad. I don't know if it was a real dad or not. And then we waited, looked out the window until this little gal was looking the other way, and then we went running down, jumped in the van to leave. Let's say it this way. We sat there for a while. We pulled away, and I turned to Shannon and I said, don't you ever do this again. That sense of abandonment that I felt, I will never forget. Emotional capacity to deal with disappointment. Some of you have been through this, I know. You've fostered, you've done this, you've done that, you've done the other. You better have some reserve. Because I can tell you, those are not easy times, even for the strongest of people. You didn't hear me tell you, don't do it. You're just hearing me, just be realistic. In fact, do it. I would encourage the very thing. Oh, by the way, that story doesn't end. Just last November, Shannon and Joella packed up to go to Poland. And they're over there with their three biological children as we speak. As it would be, and they told us plainly, I'm on the board there as well. They said, okay, I know we just need to tell you, we're 10 years downstream, but if Jaina comes up for placement in a permanent home, we're coming home. Can you guess what happened just a month ago? CYS called after 8 years now. She's a 10-year-old. So 8 years downstream, CYS called and said, listen, we just removed Jaina from her home. They have done this 4, 5, 6 times before and sent her back, but they said this time she's not going back. Now remember, I'm emphasizing capacity. just the arms that are big enough, or the heart that is big enough, or the life that is lived in such a way that's big enough to absorb this kind of stuff. Our world hurts deeply. It really does. And honestly, I'm on the AIM board. We do a number of different things as far as I like what I-58's doing. I mean, my heart is just warmed by it. Family as ministry, listen, there is all of the ministry that you possibly would want. Right by your next door. There's foster children all over the place that need to be cared for. We live, I keep saying, we live at the end of the book of Malachi. We live in the curse of a fatherlessness generation, a fatherless generation. You know that without me telling you. It has opened enormous doors for ministry there. Hey, let's develop the capacity is my push here to actually do this type of thing. Let me keep going here a bit. Opportunity, seize the moment. So what are you hearing me say? Well, preparation. I can promise you if the preparation has been done and your eyes and your ears are open, there will be opportunity. Plenty of opportunity. And seize the moment. Just another story to tell from our family, and here's what I mean by it. So we didn't go way out of our way. Our children were small. We're coming home from a church service at the church that my wife grew up in, Roe Mennonite Church, down in Chambersburg, close to Chambersburg, Shippensburg area. And we're looking three times or four. We look off to the left, and here we see a man lying in a bed through the picture window, flat on his back, staring up from what we could tell, staring straight up. We said, well, who is that man? We don't know this. I said, let's stop sometime. So we stopped, and we went in, and we talked with him. His name was Arthur Hocker. It turned out that he had some kind of disease, and so he had a tracheotomy in his throat. And there he's lying on a bed. He's bedfast. That developed into a friendship, and I could tell you a lot of different things about him. The piece I wanted to tell you was this piece of ministry. It came time for him to die. He's in the hospital. He's dying. His wife, Helen, calls us and says, could you please come and gather around the bed with Arthur one more time and sing a couple of your songs and pray with him? I said, of course. So I called she said, you'll have to call a doctor and get cleared. So I called the doctor. Oh, my. He said, no, you can't do that. He said, listen, you want your children to remember Arthur as he was. That man's lying in a bed dying. I said, Doc, now wait a minute here. I have a question for you. Do you have television? And he said, oh, yeah. I said, your children watch it? He said, yeah. I said, how does it affect him? I don't know what he said. I said, look, Doc, here's the way I want to raise my family. This is real life. This man is dying. That's true. I would just as well that my children, rather than watch all that shooting and killing and carrying on and all that stuff that happens on the tube. Now, I know this was a number of years ago. Nowadays, they get this media other ways. But back then, that's the way it was. So I said, well, I'd far rather have them in a real life situation and see a man who is dying and in an appropriate way be exposed to the idea of death. This man, whom they knew and sang for, is dying. Well, he said, you know what, if you put it that way. So we did. And I don't need to tell you that this is an experience they still talk about. You know, gathering around there, I grabbed that man's hand, and I remember, I have never had a death grip in my hand like that in my life. You know, this man's dying. And to sing those songs and to bless the Lord there and to pray over a man that's dying. My point here, family is ministry. It was more than just Arthur. There was a doctor that I hoped just heard a little bit. They got a little glimpse of a family who is at least trying to serve the King in whatever way we possibly can and not ignoring the realities of life. This is what I'm referring to. Skills for the kingdom. I gave you a couple of tearjerkers. These aren't tearjerkers. Sheila and I don't sing. But yes, we do. We can sing. But you know what? We know the value of singing. So right early on, I said to Sheila, I said, okay, we maybe don't know what we're doing, but you know what? I don't have a lot of money, but I have money. I have money for good music. I've got money for that because I want my children to have that skill. I'll let you decide if they have it or not, but I'm just saying that we worked at it to hand them a skill we didn't have. And here's my point on this. A family is ministry. Don't forget, we minister to ourselves, to our own culture, to who we are as a people. And a question I have, and the question is, Sheila and I said, on the other side of the bridge, We want our family to make a contribution to Strasburg Mennonite Church, to Roe Mennonite Church, to the Mennonite community that we belong to. At the end of the day, we want that to be a contribution, not a subtraction. Now, of course, we've got our faults. I could talk about those, but so I'm just saying these are the things I think that actually need. And I could talk about some more skills here too, because they're. But don't forget, this happens in family. It happens by encouragement. It happens by a little pushing around. Yes. So these are things I think are important. Seasons of life. Oh boy. I want to come back to you ladies. My wife took early retirement. I like to kid her about this. I mean, that lady goes out for breakfast with more people and more days out of the week than you can shake a stick at. And they're neighbors, and they're young ladies who want to talk about things, and mothers who want to talk about things and so forth. And she's always saying, "Mom, I'll have coffee with you this morning, but I'm going out with so-and-so. And I'm paying for it. Early retirement." I love every minute of it. I really do. Listen, I just want to remind you of something. So, so there's a couple of older ladies here. This never ends. We're talking about serving the. We're talking about family as ministry. Just Sheila and me anymore. Jordan's teaching at Belleville up there with Mark, I think he's thinking about getting married sometime. I'm not quite sure, but it looks that way. And a few things along that line. Well, so we're kind of there alone, and we're actually asking ourselves, so now what? So we're done. Oh, no, we're not. Oh, no, we're not. As long as we've got health and strength, I told her, I said, okay, early retirement for you, what a blessing. So you're not needed to take care of a whole lot of children anymore, but yep, you got all the money behind you need. Not quite, but you get... just go for it. Get out there. There's a 98-year-old neighbor, and there's a couple of other neighbors around there that she goes sees them regularly, and I'm just blessed. So my ministry is to support her in her ministry while I'm teaching at Faith Builders. Praise the Lord. He says I just have less than a minute here, so stop right there. Somebody have a quick comment, a question? Do I have anything else up here? Oh, enjoy the adventure. And I mean that. If Sheila or I would have known the roads we were going to travel when we got married, we'd have gasped. But it's been a great road. We've had some tough times, but my, what an adventure. We did.
To make that a part of their, how they think about life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I failed to say at the outstart, sometimes I see people working really hard to integrate their family with their ministry, like Faith Builders. So I teach at Faith Builders. So now they really think they're doing things if their children are involved at Faith Builders. We try to do that, and we do that. But, you know, I have found it more effective. Here is a family ministry. This is what we do as a family, and they're a part of it. So, for whatever that's worth. You know what? 0 minutes and beyond, I'm going to stop right there. You're back on the floor.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.